podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
My name is the artist, formerly known as Kevin Graham, and this is your Wednesday bulletin. And please note that no swans were hurt in the making of this bulletin. Patrick's not here today. I wonder what I've done. I met Patrick twice at the weekend. Right. I met him at the Martin O'Neill hang on Saturday night, and I met him outside Hamden on Sunday.
Did you get a ticket then?
Who?
Me? You. Did you get a ticket?
Yes, me and my daughter both got tickets, yes.
Ah, nice. Brilliant.
So, yeah, that was our first cup final and first Celtic Rangers game. Yes. Right? So, she said...
Worth mentioning, Kev, by the way, I know I put this in the chat, but the guy introduced himself to me at the weekend after the game, and the best way to introduce yourself, I think, ever, to tell someone you've been watching a podcast, you just walked up to me and went... No need to punch a swan today, then, eh? Fair enough.
So I think we Patrick must be working in that. That's fine, that's no problem. Martin O'Neill on Saturday night, thanks to everybody that came up to me and says I looked far younger in real life than what I did on the podcast. And I say, I think I've got a dodgy camera, I really do. And a special wee mention to Anne, who says, if I didn't say hello to her, she's going to batter her husband. So, Anne, hiya. And thanks for listening all the time, and it was great to actually meet you. I think we're actually just going to speak about Sunday today, and maybe we'll look at Paisley. But first, I've got a question. And I'm going to go to Paddy first. Who are we, Paddy? Are we the other mob League Cup winners? Or are we the other mob League Cup champions? I'm asking for a friend here.
Aye, we're not the other mob anything. I think if anything, we've shown that we are the mob. That's a bit too close to something else, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Listen, that was just tremendous on Sunday. Just to kind of listen to that garbage all week on the week leading up to the cup final, it was just grinding my gears. And we never had any Celtic player come out in the media and spout half the garbage that they were spouting, even the weeks leading up to it as well. It was just good to kind of get out there and show that we are the dominant team in Scotland, the best team in Scotland. And I'll be honest, it's going to be hard to see how that's going to change in the next season or two or three seasons, the way we're going now. Mm-hmm. Cash rich, we can strengthen it well. We've got a manager that plans... With the TSA three transfer windows ahead, it's actually frightening to see how good we can actually become. And I tell you something, I can't wait to see us in Europe next season with this team. You can just see something building special now that I'm just kind of with this team that he's built. I can't wait to see what happens next season. I haven't even finished this season yet.
We'll get to that, John. The reason that I'm saying are we winners or champions, because there's a wee shop in the Thistle Centre in Stirling and it sells framed stuff. And I've just noticed that they're claiming they were Scottish Cup champions last year.
That's right.
I'm wondering, are we League Cup champions or League Cup winners? I don't know what the terms meant to be this day.
Is this pronouns?
Is this all to do with pronouns or something like that?
I'm been in that conversation right now. I think this happened last year when the other mob, tried to title themselves as champions or something, didn't they?
Scottish Cup champions.
So you know, you're not champions of a cup. You're winners of a cup. Very obviously, you're winners of a cup. You know what I mean? So, and you're the champions of your country. You know, when you win the league, they're obviously, you know, they may well have forgotten that, you know, because it's 1 in 10 or whatever. I mean, I don't know. They shouldn't be worried about champions or winners. You know, instead of renaming themselves the Rangers, they should have renamed themselves Runners-Up Rangers, you know, to reflect more accurately what their position is. So, no, that's an inaccurate claim, I would say, for anyone that follows the game.
No, it is an inaccurate claim, but, like, it shows you how maybe delusional there is. When I was coming back from Hampden on Sunday, my dad texts me. And we'll get on to the game. My dad texts me and he says, I smoked all my cigarettes in the last half hour there. Can you go and get me another packet? And I went, right, I'll go and pick up that pack. So I go to the shop, just doing face hoods. And there's two Rangers fans in front of me and in the queue in front of me, like getting stuff for their work the following day, and that I'm sure. And I really did think they had been watching. Now, we'll all get on to this, but at the game, I thought it was closer than what it actually was after I've watched it back. But then again, that's just emotion and nerves that actually happens, right? So these two guys were standing in front of me, and the conversation sort of went like this. There was nothing in that game. We, as in Celtic, are not that good. Beal will make us beat them twice and it's game on for the league. They played well, but we're unlucky and there were shocking goals to lose. The only thing I agreed with, but what they actually did say was Morelos is a turd. And that was the only thing I could actually agree with. And I'm going, were they actually watching the same game as me? Now, I had my doubts about the game, and when I watched the post-match here and all the lads were actually ranting and raving about Atati and Aaron Moy, and I'm going, I'll need to watch this back again, because I think I was just too much of a baggy emotion. And I saw somebody on Twitter, my pal Stuart, calling me, what was it, a clarity of observation. But I mean, I wasn't there. I definitely wasn't on Sunday, Stuart. So it made me wonder. I says, what? It made me wonder, what game were they actually watching? So I'm going to ask John first, right? When the Celts went up to lift the League Cup, what did it mean to you on Sunday? When we went up to lift that League Cup and we became the League Cup winners, not the League Cup champions, mm-hmm. What did it actually mean to you?
Well, potentially very important for this year, potentially more important than it should be, for a number of reasons. Like I was just saying to Paddy before we came on there, I was so keen to see them back in their box. I worked myself into, you know, basically a state of high dough when we were watching the game, and I had to watch the game back. It wasn't the game I thought it was, because I was freaking out at every possession that they had. But the, you know, what it meant to me, well, let's start with the sort of the basics of the thing. Beal is a gormless, smarmy, charmless chancer. He's the kind of guy that's the worst salesman in the office.
See what you see, John. See what you see.
He believes he's the best, and he keeps telling everyone he's the best. He's naive and immature and not that bright. And basically, I think when all this goes Pete Tong for him, he's going to start double-jobbing as CEO of Beal's International Traders. And Rangers' next ventures into the transfer market might actually be in a market with him trying to say, you know, Morelos, Tavernier and Kent, 3 for £1. you know. So just to see him back in his box is wonderful, because, you know, it's that unjustified. He's the only guy I think I've ever seen who's been smug before he's done anything. You know, I mean, just completely delusional, unwarranted and delusional. And it's just nice to see that wee smackdown. And it was great to see him gathering the players at the end, having their own pitch talk in a formation that you might only describe as a huddle. So that was good to see. But in terms of importance, I think it's incredibly important, for that reason. I think it ruins their momentum. It ruins any self-belief, you know, whether, you know, realistic or not, that they had. They have nothing to shoot for now except, you know, to be trying to be Scottish Cup champions again, you know, Scottish Cup winners, but they've got nothing to shoot for. So we've just took the legs from under them. There's no way they'll catch us in the league. It's never going to happen. To try to think of something there that didn't involve a swear word, but no, it's absolutely never going to happen. So, you know, they've got the Scottish Cup to shoot for, and they know almost certainly that we'll take that off them as well. Yeah, no, we'll come to the ins and outs of the game, I'm sure. But, you know, what it meant to me was I was so happy, because it validated everything that we believed to be true, you know. And you weren't imagining how well we were playing. You weren't imagining that we were, you know, clearly the better footballing team. And it's just lovely to have that validation, you know. So a wee bit relieved, because obviously you have a bit of anxiety about losing any of these games, but mainly just jubilant, absolutely jubilant, and delighted for the players, delighted for the manager, delighted for the fans that were there, who got to enjoy that atmosphere, and obviously very bitter and raging that I couldn't get a ticket. So that's what it meant to me. I'll leave it to Paddy to go next.
Paddy, I've got two things to bring up there. Obviously, what did it mean to you? But John mentioned there that Stephen Gerrard, the guy who put the cones out for Stephen Gerrard, as Lawrence Connolly keeps on calling him. when I saw him taking his team into that huddle, and I'm going to call it a huddle, I'm going, he can't be giving his team a bollocking on a park after a cup final defeat. He can't be sitting there, like, giving them, like, a doing, basically. And he came out after it and admitted that he did.
He
told them that it wasn't good enough.
Right, okay. I mean, well, whose fault's that? Do you know what I mean? It's hardly the player's fault, because... Well, right, okay, I'll take that back. It is a player's fault, right? But they go out and they carry out his instructions. So whatever his instructions were, they've either totally ignored them or they've just done whatever they want, because all I seen for that team was long ball, side to side, and a hopeful punt. That's pretty much... Now, saying that, I only saw that when I watched it back over last night. On the Sunday, I was caught up in the whole emotion yet and obviously had a few drinks as well, so you kind of see the game through different eyes. But I thought last night before I come on today, I would look at it back, and it's a totally different game, for what I remember. And I just felt they offered nothing. I don't even think Joe Hart had a save to make. They hit the post once, but I don't ever recall Hart making a save. We were more direct, we were more dominant. But if he's sitting there and he's gave them a bollocking after that, and surely he's got to take some responsibility for that as well. And for what I've seen for the post-match interviews, I don't think he did. I don't think he says he got anything wrong. It was all about we and us. And I never heard that's on me, which is strange. That's usually the go-to, isn't it? That's usually the thing that always comes out after a defeat or a poor result. But the League Cup in turn means everything to me. I said it before, I said it consistently for weeks, that every cup means everything. The League Cup's got a special place in our recent history, as we've already kind of spoke about. Mm-hmm. It was massive for Wim Jansen. It was massive for Ange. It was massive for Martin O'Neill as well in his first cup towards his first treble. It just gives you that belief and it just galvanises everything you're trying to do for the whole season. And like you say, it's a first cup and a treble. I think I've rambled a wee bit there, but the cup means everything to me. But in terms of if he was giving him a bollocking, do you know what? That's John summed it up. That's probably a rookie mistake to make. What he should have done is just let the players wallow it in a wee bit, maybe let them take stock and then deal with that in the dressing room. But if he's done that in the park, all the better.
It's very, what was it, Phil Brown kept his team on the park at half-time.
Aye, even that was quickly as well.
They were getting and doing that. I'm sure that these guys have got to think on their feet, and the fact also, and we're going to move on to this, and the fact also that they had already booked a motivational speaker to come in and speak to them.
Aye.
Maybe it shows you all they need. David Brent style.
I think that says more about Beale than anything else, didn't it? If your manager can't get you inspired for a cup final against your biggest rivals when you know your league's gone, I couldn't understand that. I don't get that.
They're all going to IKEA to get inspirational quotes for their kitchens.
But he's that's the thing, and I've just said that there. He's a love child of Del Boy and David Brent, isn't he? I mean, that's exactly the way he comes across. He comes across as just a chancer and a spiv. And, all that talking he did, and we spoke about it last week and stuff, and, and just sitting there just, yeah, I mean, he's talking about us when the other manager's sitting next to him.
Yeah,
you know, the sheer effrontery of that, the brass neck on him, talking about our team, the manager of that team sitting next to him, so he needed put back in his box, as I say, and it was a joyous thing to behold, because having watched it back, I don't think they really laid a glove on us. At the time, I didn't see it that way. At the time, I was so hyper that, every threat or every possession they got, had me, oh my God. But watching it back, it wasn't, it was nowhere near as close as I thought it was. And it was maybe, 20 minutes in the second half, we didn't play particularly well. But other than that, it wasn't anywhere near as close as it seemed on first viewing.
What I actually thought when the final whistle went, it was great. It meant to me, it's my first cup final with my daughter, and it was great that we won it, and we beating Rangers in the cup final. It was absolutely magic. And that was the first thing I thought about. I didn't think about what it meant for the season. I didn't think about what it meant for anything else. I just thought at that point, I went, this is a really, really good moment that I've spent with my daughter. And that's all it went through. That's all it really went through my head. At that point, and even then, after that, even watching all the celebrations and that, the celebrations were brilliant. I thought the team really showed that they could let loose at certain points, and they could have a wee party. But like you, I walked out the stadium. I bumped into Jai P on the way out the stadium, actually, and he was going to the Brazen Head, and I was going back to my supporters' bus, and we all having a blether. And I says to him, I went, see, the more I think about this now, I don't think they actually I don't think they, in the last 8-10 minutes, they actually done anything against us. No. I said, I need to go and watch it back. I says, but now having a think about it, I think we completely dominated that period of the game. And when I watched it back, it was true. We played the last 10 minutes in their half of the field. We were up there. Yeah. They were going long, but we were running the ball back and just going on the attack up there. It wasn't as close as what I actually thought at the game. But then again, I think that was just complete and utter nerves of a cup final occasion. And I must admit, I had to go back and watch it because the guys were praising Moy and Atati for a superb first half. And I'm going, I thought they were rotten in the first half. I thought they kept on losing the ball in the first half. And when I watched it again, I was like... Yeah. Oh, they were absolutely brilliant. Why can I only remember the things that they've done wrong? I can't absolutely remember. I want to talk about the goals. I've got another question to ask you before we talk about the goals, because I don't think the goals were like I've been spoken about enough. And it was these two Rangers fans in front of me that got me thinking about the goals when they say the goals were strong. But what's the biggest gap? You ready? The gap in the Rangers midfield or the gap between Fashion Sakala's front two teeth? What was the bigger gap on Sunday? Oh, and it doesn't matter how Aaron Moy would find space in any of them.
Yeah. Well, is it not the gap between behind Hall of Fame inductee and captain Tavernier? Is that not what the gap is?
Correct title, John Tavernier Penn.
You know, and just honestly, just to skip ahead a wee bit, the boy given another apology for another abject performance. If they gave out awards for apologies, that boy would have more bling than a vajazzle. Do you know what I mean? He's absolutely just does nothing but apologise for them being completely grim. How many times is that now? I don't know. Don't we have a translator that's won more medals than him? Anyway, that's just another that's nonsense hyping up of people. But, you know, both of those goals... unless I'm mistaken. Oh, no, the second one came down the left. The first one went behind them, didn't it? Both came down the side. I just tried to do the mirror image in my head. And again, that first goal, when you're talking about it at the time, and again, this is where you're not really seeing the game as it's laid out. So at the time, I thought, you know, we took sort of good chances from... not really periods of the game we weren't really dominating, but watching that back, that first goal in particular, we ran them ragged for about 3 minutes. You know, we had them all over the place. That's why they were out of position. So we had that ball, we ran them ragged, nearly scored. They come back out again, we got it again, ran them ragged again, then we did down the channel and the ball in, and thank you to Dyson for having a mighty sclaff at it and missing the greatest dummy never seen.
What really got me, John, was you would have got it when you watched it back as well, Paddy, last night. We scored when we were having optimum pressure.
Yeah.
It wasn't just an attack we had. It was 2 or 3 minutes of constant attacking. All started with Carl Starfelt winning the ball high up the pitch.
Yeah.
And we had the ball for about 40, 50 seconds before each of those goals. Just before the first goal, Kyogo had had the header, he had had the shot. We were ramping up the pressure at that point, and the goal came because of that, because we were pinning them back in their half. And it was the same with the second goal, Paddy, as well. We had a couple of minutes of pressure before we actually scored that goal. And it's making the big moments count, and we made the two big moments count when we were actually on top in that game.
Can I just say before you go there, Kev, your headphones or something are bouncing about, they're not connected properly. It's making a constant rattling noise. No. Sorry, Paddy.
All I was going to say was the second goal was just came for Dyson Maeda and his pressure on Tavernier. When you look at the amount of tracking that Maeda did during that game and how he kept Tavernier quiet. It was a pressure leading up to that in the second goal where he obviously Tavernier won the ball off Maeda. Maeda chased him back, made him panic, a loose ball, and away we go. We go and get the second goal. I can't remember who it was that intercepted. Was it Starfelt that intercepted and then put it to Moy? I can't remember. And then we got the second goal. So a lot of our joy came down that the Hall of Famer side, and I just don't understand the hype and around that guy. Take away his penalties. He's a very, very poor defender, and he's been shown up against us. I mean, how many times now has he made mistakes? I think I'd written about it the other day, where there's been key moments in every Glasgow derby where he's been at fault for a goal that we've scored, but yet they still seem to be lauding him for this. That for being one of the Rangers' greats or the new club's greats, it baffles me. But no, I just thought overall the team were excellent. There was a couple of standouts. I've got to say, for all the criticism and harsh criticism that Starfelt gets, I thought Barn, he had two minor mistakes during that game. He was outstanding. He was immense during that game. Johnston on the right hand side, he's that boy, I don't know, he's like my dad here, I don't know where he gets his energy from. He just kept going as well. But there's so many players that you could pick up on. McGregor was brilliant as well. I just thought overall it was an incredible team performance, and we never even got a second gear. And I mean that, I actually genuinely mean that. I don't think we got a second gear. I think if we really had to, if we were pushed, we could have stepped up another gear or two and really, really turned the screw. So brilliant to watch. Nowhere near as close as what I thought on the day when I had a few whiskies. And when I watched the game last night, I thought we were just absolutely dominant. For that, apart from that 15-minute period when they were kind of pressing, but even with that, they never done much with it.
Johnson. Johnson is brilliant. He's so competitive. Oh. You could see him having his granny in a chokehold over a game of Monopoly. Do you know what I mean? He's got more dig than a gold miner. He's fantastic. And that clip that's doing the rounds now of him just monstering Barisic is absolutely fantastic. Really enjoyed watching that.
Barisic must be fed up seeing us, eh?
I've got to the point where I feel sorry for him now. He just gets it for anybody, doesn't he? Like, McGregor taught him a lesson last season. I've had to teach him a lesson every time he plays against him. Now Johnson's having a shot, he's only on the door 2 minutes. So I'm actually starting to feel sorry for him, but it is what it is.
Johnson had me written on one of these questions: who is Josip Juranovic? I think we've all moved on that quickly now, and Josip Juranovic is going to wonder if they're missing him, and he's checking, he's like checking his ex's Facebook profile. And you're saying, oh no, she's moved on. They've moved on too quick for my liking, and he's unhappy.
But there's another thing you were mentioning, Pat, Maeda, because when you're watching the game initially, you're seeing the mistakes, because he was losing possession in really dangerous areas attacking. So, but what you don't really appreciate during the game is how many defensive actions he has until you watch it back. I mean, Maeda is what happens when you give meth to a Yorkshire Terrier. Do you know what I mean? It's just that constant unnatural energy, just up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Incredible to watch. And when you look back, I mean, the number of times I heard, because you can hear the commentary when you watch it back, the number of times it's Maeda in defence, Maeda clearing the ball, Maeda winning that challenge. Now, did he have a great game going forward? No, not really.
He was poor.
But again, it's difficult to fault that contribution because it lifts the pressure. It's constantly relieving the pressure on the back four. It's just wonderful to see the energy he has and the commitment he has. It's very easy to get down. We've seen plenty of players in years gone by, if they were having a good game going forward, would just throw their arms up. Or they're having a bad game going forward, they'd just throw their arms up and take the huff. You know what I mean? And they'd just stand up there waiting for something to create something for them. It's at the very least, it's refreshing to see that a guy who must know, obviously, he's not playing well going forward is getting tore in going back to try to do his best to help the team, and he's just not leaving it there, it's great to see.
Even before he was subbed, I think he was subbing like the 76th minute, he was tracking back halfway into our half through midfield to win the ball back. I mean, I don't know where he gets his energy from. That's it. He's been doing that from kickoff, it was just immense, absolutely immense.
Strange thing was Paddy as well. See, when they took him off, the first thing I thought about was defensive duties. He's keeping Tavernier quiet. It says it's news up to Haskabanovic to actually keep him quiet. Has he got that in him, eh?
But what Haskabanovic did was he kept possession, didn't he, in their half in the last 10 minutes or so, and I thought he was brilliant for his 10-minute cameo as well.
I don't want to hear anything good about Haskabanovic or O'Reilly, who disgraced themselves by ruining my correct score prediction of 3-1. Do you know what I mean? absolutely should be embarrassed to pull on a jersey after that. The two that he missed, completely ruined it for me.
Haksabanovic says he'll score the next thing.
I have no doubt he will.
What I liked about the first goal, and it's no usual that I agree with Ali McCoist, but AJSC Technology comes in and says, Maeda's scalp wasn't great, but he's still there to affect the play. He contributes immensely, even when not at his best. It was his run that makes a goal. It was a great through ball by Hatate, a great run by Taylor, a great ball by Moy, but the fact is, Maeda's bailed into that front post, and that's what's caused the complete and utter confusion. That is what's caused the confusion.
Yeah.
I think we need to speak about the wee man who actually scored the goals. And my next question is, and I'll go to Paddy first, and you can answer this anywhere you want, because I never sent you the script this week. So I just said that we're going to talk about the cup final. Who is Kyogo Furuhashi, Paddy? Who is he?
Who is he? The guy's just a gem, isn't he? An absolute gem. Gemmy, a football player. He's always got a smile on his face. He never seems to complain when he's hooked. I don't even know how to answer that question, because everything I'm going to say is just going to be positive. I just love him. I love the way he plays the game. I love the way he's deadly in front of goal. I love the way he's proved everybody wrong since he's came to the club. If we all remember the amount of derogatory comments that was coming for this wee Japanese boy coming for the J-League, how's he going to be able to stand up to six foot four defenders and make it in our game? My God, he's proved every single one of these people wrong, isn't he? He's got the potential to be one of the best players we've seen in a long time, put it that way. He's got a long way to go, and if I'm not putting him anywhere near the brackets of Larsen, because that's just daft. But in terms of somebody said it, all right. I don't know.
Larsen would have scored that header.
There you go. I know, but that's the thing, though. He's good in the air. He can score with his head. He can score with his thighs. He can score with his stomach. Well, he's not scored yet with his backside, if I remember right. He scored with both feet. The guy's just tremendous. There isn't enough words that would do him justice. Yeah, I just love him.
John, what I actually thought was, on Monday, I was asked to do a wee spot for the Liverpool podcast, Anfield Wrap, and their show, The Coach Home, and they wanted to speak about the two cup finals on Sunday. Seemingly there was one, Eddie Howe. That's a parallel universe, that, eh? I wonder if there's a universe where Ange Postecoglou is the manager of Newcastle and Eddie Howe is the manager of Celtic.
Oh, I'm sure the link will happen soon.
it's a real sliding doors moment, that one, isn't it?
I wonder if there is. See, I've got into the Marvel films because my nephew's 8 or 9, and they keep on going about this multiverse, and I'm completely into that. I'm completely into the fact there's a multiverse, and there is somewhere that we won the UEFA Cup and they've won a Champions League. I'm just not there to see it. But once I find Doctor Strange and I can go through these multiverses, I will be there, definitely.
I agree with Paddy there. I just looked back at my notes, and this is a joke from last year, not a good joke, but still, I described Kyogo.
Who are you, Peter Kay? You said jokes.
I described Kyogo last year at the cup final as being so fast he turned up at Hampden on Friday. the same thing still applies. There just aren't enough superlatives, and the reason is not just because of his play, because it's very much like Maeda, it's about his personality. You know, he brings so much more to the team than being a deadly finisher. But what a boost it must be to the other players to have a guy who is as good as that and is such a good team player, so excitable, so positive, so pleasant. He's such a decent guy. You know, and who loves it, obviously, is loving the attention, loving the club, loving the game. And it's so infectious. you know, and you really can't help but absolutely love the guy, you know. And it really helps that he's a fantastic finisher. And those two goals, you know, if you think about it, they couldn't be any further away from the two he scored last year. You know, I mean, the sort of long-range efforts, chips over the top, all the rest of it, and these two, you know, from right in the middle of the goal. And it just shows how talented he is. I'm really, really interested to see what happens because, you know, we were complaining at the start of the year he wasn't taking his chances. Now he's taking his chances. He's not taking all of them, you know, but like any striker, and you could say this about all the players, you know, we played more than well enough to beat them and it was more comfortable than I thought, but it was a long way from a flawless performance. Mm-hmm. You know, we were still giving the ball away. People still had mistakes all over the place. We didn't take chances. So it was a long way from a flawless performance. So I'm absolutely over the moon, delighted, as you would be, jubilant that we won. But it's very, very important that we just don't get ahead of ourselves here in terms of what this means, as regards progress.
We'll come to that, but who is Kyogo? The guy for Anfield rap went like that to me. He's getting noticed down here because he's scoring big goals. Anytime Celtic are in a big game, Kyogo scores. Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't really like that. I'm getting noticed. With folk who didn't watch Scottish football, and just have got a passing interest, well, that wee Kyogo scored again. And his name's getting noticed down south. I didn't really
Do we need to do what we said about Hatate last week and start just calling him by his number? Just don't mention his name.
Just didn't mention his name. So I then watched the game back again, as I've said about 15 times already in the first 35 minutes. There's 690 is on. Please hit likes. I can't see how many likes we've got, but please make sure we get over a couple hundred likes. When you watch the second goal, and somebody's bring in a comment about this, and it's about Barisic again. Happy birthday, Martin O'Neill. It is Martin O'Neill's birthday. I haven't a hang with it. When you watch the second goal, and this is the first time I've ever noticed that in 18 months Kyogo's been here. As the ball is coming across the face of the goal, Kyogo has his hand round Barisic's back with a fistful of his jersey. So there's no way that Barisic's getting in front of him. Yeah. Even though he probably would have got in front of him anyway. But I went like that. Oh, you sneaky wee get. And then I started... I started thinking like that. I'm like, I wonder how many times I've not noticed that he's done things like that to get in front of defenders just to make sure he's got a wee hod of their jersey, a wee hod of their shorts, and stuff like that. Eh? He's devious, Paddy. Eh? For a guy probably, so wee, he's devious.
Aye, but it's probably because what we see is that as the guy who, when he commits a foul or when he does something that he shouldn't have done, he's the first one to apologise, isn't he? He's always the first one to kind of... He looks like a more the king of fair play rather than being sneaky. So I'm glad. I'm glad he's got that side to his game because he probably needs it. He needs it to kind of...
It's not sneaky though, is it? I mean, those are the tricks of the trade. You don't get to be a striker at an elite level without knowing how to bounce off of guys, how to make sure they don't get in front of you, how to work the angles, how to get behind them, how to get in front of them. You know, that just doesn't happen by accident. You know, so I mean, as we saw for their goal, massive big shove on Moy, pushed him about 5 feet. Very, very obviously for their goal. Because I heard someone said to me after the game, Moy get caught under the ball. He didn't get caught under the ball at all. He got shoved about 5 feet by Morelos or whoever it was that was standing behind him. And he completely lost his place. So tricks of the trade. And, you know, quite rightly so, everyone's got them. You know, there's always sort of the same sort of thing you see at corners, standing in feet, standing and pulling jerseys. But as you say, it's not just nice to see it. You have to have it. Aye. You have to have it. You've got to get an edge on other elite athletes. You know, you've got to get an edge on other great players.
I think what I mean is it's good to see that side of the game because it was just maybe last season he's been accused of being a diver, he's been accused of being a cheat and all that kind of stuff. So maybe I've worded that wrong. What I didn't want to come across is that he's got that I suppose, devious side. But you're right, John, that is something you need. Because the amount of grief you took last season for absolutely nothing was unbelievable. So, I like that. I like that kind of side to his game, because every good striker's got it, and it's probably now that we're just... I mean, I did see that as well. I seen the replay last night, and I watched it again, Kev, and I thought, man, lucky that didn't go to VAR, because that could have been a wee contentious decision, you know, but I didn't see the push on Moy at their goal. I didn't see that. I'll need to look at that again.
I must admit, though, Paddy, even though you had a hoddy's jersey, Barisic had a hoddy his jersey
Real history of VAR, Kev, you know the way that's going to go, didn't you? So I suppose that's a point I'm trying to make as well. But nah, I love that, because it just, and he's got 24 goals this season already, with 13 games left, or potentially 13 games, depending on how we're going to cup, none of them penalties. He's going to easily hit 30 goals plus this season, isn't he?
Yeah.
I thought as well, and we mentioned Haksabanovic earlier on, the first two contributions of Iwata and O were to two Rangers players, basically. he lost the ball first, right enough. He actually passed the ball at the park. The next night, he brung somebody down. And O as well gave was it Ben Davis?
A good clatter.
A good clatter as well. Yeah. A Barry Robson clatter, I would call that. he actually gave him eh? I thought they just... I just thought they kept the pace when they came on. I think Iwata just kept it tidy, and O just kept their back line under a wee bit of pressure.
I have to say, at the time, and even in retrospect, I thought that was a real gamble, bringing on O as early as he did. I really did, because, you know, if they'd sneaked another goal and we're going to extra time and all the rest of it, you know, to me at this point, he hasn't looked like, you know, he's the man to get you. You know, you'd rely on to get you a goal. He has proven to be, you know, he's a big, strong laddie, and gets himself about. I had to deal with someone this morning. I think it was one of the other blogs, E-Tims or something. Like that. Someone tagged me in it saying they just compared O to my father. And I was like, no, I don't think so. You know, because it's like mobile and athletic. You know, someone said he's the most mobile and athletic guy you've had there, with, you know, great feet and all the rest of it. And I was like, but that's not even an accurate description of him. What do you mean by mobile? You know, is he more mobile than Jackie Marcus? Or, you know, what do you mean by mobile? You know, what does that mean? Is he faster? You know, does he get around more? Is he putting himself in better positions? What does mobile mean? You know what I mean? And great feet. When did we see that? Now, I'm not trying to give the guy a hard time. You know, you can see what Ange likes about him. But I wouldn't, you know, I thought that was a big decision to take Kyogo off, who was playing so well, and bring O on at the point where the game was potentially still in the balance. Because
Think that's because John Ange could see the game how we couldn't see it during the time? Because obviously, looking back at the game last night, there was never really much of a threat, was there really, when you look at it?
Yeah.
It was all kind of, and maybe that's where Ange thought he could do a different option, because we did start to go a bit more direct, I think, in the last 10 minutes or so. Maybe that was a plan, because obviously we were under a bit of pressure around about the 70-odd minute or the 65th minute, and I think maybe the plan was obviously to give that different option out. That's why O was brought on.
I can see why he did it, you know. But for me, you know, in a cup final, the boy's not done enough yet for me to be relying on him. You know, because all that happens if they get another set piece, and we, you know, and they get sneaky at another set piece. And as I say, you know, that was definitely that goal should have gone to VAR. That should not have stood. You know, Moy. It wasn't just a wee push. It was a full push in the back, sent him about 4 feet the wrong direction. That's why he lost his man. So that goal should never have happened. But let's say it happens again, and it's a set piece, and then we're in extra time and all the rest of it. He's not done enough for me, despite his potential, to be relied upon as the guy that's going to get you the goal. Now, that said, based on the way Haksabanovic and O'Reilly missed a couple at the end, you know, we could have got, you know, plenty of goals from midfield if the boys had taken their chances. But, you know, to me, I, as I say, I just thought it was a risk. That's just my opinion on it, though.
it was only probably option that they had. And that circumstances that we found ourselves in, I didn't really think it was a risk. I wasn't thinking like you in that way, John. I still thought that we had enough guys on the pitch to score goals if the unthinkable did actually happen. I think we need to ask, where are Celtic now? And yes, when we look back on it, we weren't really troubled. But that's not to say that we didn't need to work for that victory, and we needed to work in that second half when the game, as Keith Jackson's politely called it, became a sausage fest, and the ball was black and blue. We had to basically stand up, be counted, and actually do something that people say is Ange Postecoglou win the day. We game managed that game out. After about 74 minutes out, we took every niggly free kick. We actually slowed the game right down. We took the sting out of the game. We showed that we can actually be streetwise when we wanted to be, which was something which was thrown at a Postecoglou's side. You need to change. You need to do this. I saw that in the last 15 minutes in that cup final. But I think that team will come off that park knowing, aye, we're the better side, but by God, we had to work for that victory, Paddy.
Aye, but that was something that I'd noticed the other day as well. That's a different side to a game that we suppose we never really had last season, was the ability to kind of dig in. Because we've obviously been labelled as this football inside, and we've not got that, I suppose, that midfield enforcer that people keep talking about, the defensive midfielder. But we can do the ugly side now as well, and how much does that stand us in good stead for moving forward? We were probably accused in the Champions League with a bit powder puff in midfield, not having somebody that can put a foot in the ball, and I suppose that will become, we'll see how that goes next season. But I love the fact that we've got that in our locker now. I love the fact that we can now dig in and we can show that we can manage a game out. We don't have to be this pretty football inside for 90 minutes to win a game. We can actually do the dirty side that's a mark of a good team. So it'll be interesting to see how that builds on next season, how that'll build on into Europe next season as well. But it was certainly a statement of intent that last 15 minutes when Ange made day changes to show that we have got different options now, because he's always labelled as being, he will never change his style, will never change his formation. He'll certainly change his style on Sunday, and it saw us through at the end.
Well, funny you should say that, because during last week's pod, I said I'll be very, very interested to see if we have a lead, what are the substitutions? You know, is he just going to keep going for it? Or is he going to bring on Iwata and manage the game out? And that's exactly what he did. Yep. And I was delighted to see that. Now, Iwata's first touch wasn't great, but the one thing that did become clear, you know, and I think we need to see more of him, obviously, but given his pedigree, he looks a good player going forward as well. You know, he didn't just look as if he was there to, you know, kick lumps out of people. He looks a good player going forward. So I think that gives us a huge amount of utility for next year. Because, you know, let's say, you have to sacrifice one of the more creative players, you know, because we have to recognise we're in a different environment.
You could have the argument there, John. You could have the argument there that instead of Turnbull coming on, that's how you bring on Iwata.
Yeah.
He knew himself that the game was not a game for David Turnbull at that point.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, I would like to see us, you know, I've said this before, I would definitely like to see us change formation for Europe next year in terms of, and so you're not talking a massive change, but, you know, 4-2-3-1, you know, so just have that double pivot, just have McGregor and Iwata to give you that solid base in midfield, the solid base in front of the back four. It's not a huge change, but it could make a massive difference to us defensively. And it looks like, I mean, McGregor and Iwata together at this level look as if they could be a phenomenal midfield pairing, you know, because Callum McGregor's no sort of deep-lying midfielder anyway in terms of he's just kicking lumps out of people. He's an incredibly creative player. You know, I set up the second goal. That's the kind of thing he does. Short burst run, beautiful ball through, you know, absolutely phenomenal. Takes out four players. Just great to see. But those two guys who can be both defensive and creative, who both have dig and skill, You know, that is exactly what you want. And that's, you know, the likes of Anthony Johnson, for instance. I just have to say, I feel so bad for Ralston. You know, just, I really feel bad for Anthony Ralston. I'm such a big fan of his. And through no fault of his own, he's out of it again. You know, I think we really need to give him some game time, to be fair. You know, it's not fair. But Ange doesn't like to change his back four. But anyway, different issue. But as of next year, you know, I think that we have options now, and I'd like to see the manager taking them. You know, I'd like to see us set up as a slightly more solid unit, you know, when we're in amongst the big guys next year. Because you're looking at, where do we lose it? Where do we lose games? Where is our biggest weakness? And it's always in transition. So we lose the ball high up the park when we're attacking. That those transitions kill us. So we just, you know, if we lose the ball there, we really need more cover at the back, at the highest level, when guys will take their chances, when Sakala isn't Sakala, when he's a Real Madrid winger, you know. It's something I'm really looking forward to. But the problem with these games is always, isn't it? You know, they're the best opposition we can face domestically. But we'll face much, much better than that next year. So, I mean, how do you really grade yourself? It's so difficult to know exactly where you stand. And that's why we were going on about that possible tournament in Japan at the end of the year, why I thought that would be so important to get ourselves in there amongst those big names and really see what we're about before we hit the qualifier, not the qualifiers, before we hit the tournament.
I heard over the last couple of days, somebody says you only get better playing against better players. Yeah. And I'm sure the Celtic players would have learned, because no matter what we think as a fan about that other mob, about Rangers, they are the best team that we're going to face domestically. And they have got guys which are decent football players. They are. Kent flatters to deceive, but he can cause you bother. He can actually move with the ball. And he is. But Paul Dyett comes in, and that's the most we've ever went wrong when they've been pressed high. Good to see they're thinking on their feet. I thought that as well. I actually thought Rangers had the fitness to press us high. They got the goal, they got the momentum, the game became like so ragged and stuff like that. But then what I actually thought was, there'll be guys looking at it, there'll be managers watching that game going, I know how Celtic play. And next thing you know, Paddy, we're gone long. And they're like, didn't expect them to do that.
Aye.
Oh, they're letting them, they're defending stuff in the box. We're actually quite comfortable doing the dirty side of the game. Whereas even against St Mirren, and we're going back to Paisley on Sunday against St Mirren, I didn't think St Mirren played well against us. I just thought we were utterly rotten that day. And Curtis Main then became the love child of Ronaldo, Alan McAnally and Messi all rolled into one. But I think where we are, me as a fan, where I think Celtic are, I think Celtic will not let this go, because they do know, we are a better side than Rangers, but by the way, we had to work for that victory and we're not going to let up now. And other teams will be thinking, going, even if you play a high press against them, you're having some joy, it'll just go long. So...
I thought the interesting thing about that, Kevin, always seeing the post-match interview where he was asked about that, Ange Postecoglou, he said that wasn't his decision, that was the players in the park. He lets them make the decision on the park. And I thought that was really interesting because it just shows you how much faith and how much trust he's got in these players to do the right thing, even if it goes against his philosophy or his style of football.
There was a European game last year, Paddy, when Joe Hart ran to the touchline. Or was it a domestic game and Joe Hart ran to the touchline and says to Postecoglou, can I go along?
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Can I remember
what game that was? I saw that as well, Paddy, and I thought exactly the same as you. I thought that's really interesting, because that's not the impression you get. Because if you remember him, it comes across as if it's more prescriptive than that. So if you are, because if you go back to what game was it when he was screaming,
stop passing it back.
So, you know, that's not the same thing, though. I mean, that's obviously just in a game we were dominating. He thinks we're not, you know, the style of play wasn't right at that point. But I thought it was fascinating that what he's effectively saying there, it's the same they say in the rugby. You've got to play heads up. You've got to play the game that's in front of you, not the game that you imagined in the changing room,
yeah,
you know, before you come out. You know, as they always say about the box, and everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face, you know. So it's basically, I thought that was really, really interesting, really illustrative of what he's actually saying to the players. You know, you're in charge on the pitch. Here's the style. Here's the formation. But play the game that's in front of you. Yep. You know, don't be trying to do stupid things if they're not on. Play a different style if they're not on. If there's a long ball, it's a long ball. You know, so I was fascinated by that. Now, I don't think he'd tolerate, you know, playing the way that Rangers do, just coming out and punting the ball up the park. But yep. What he's saying is within that framework, within the framework that he's laid down, this is what we do, this is our style. You know, you still have to play the game that's in front of you. You know, you still have to play the opposition and the style that's in front of you and the challenges. You have to recognise the challenges that they represent and, you know, deal with that as a team. And, you know, he's relying on those. He's basically given responsibility to those players, which is what the players want. The players want responsibility. They want to be treated as adults, as elite professional sportsmen.
You know? I found it really interesting when Axon had the conversation with Paul Lambert and they were talking about Wim Jansen. And basically Lambert says, well, Jansen says, you're the player, you know. Yeah. If you didn't make a change, if there's something going wrong when you're on the field, then it's you that's fault, no me. If you see something going wrong and you didn't change it, then it's, and I found that. I didn't know that Postecoglou had says that post-match, yeah. about us going wrong. I didn't actually know that. And maybe that shows, probably does show, that he trusts the squad of players that he's got now, maybe then more than what he did at the start of last season to actually make the correct decisions in games. Paul Andrew Martin comes in, Paddy, tells it was AZ Altmar that Hart went across and says, could he start lobbing the ball up the park? Eh? You've got to trust your squad, eh?
Yeah. It's his squad now, isn't it? When you look back at what we had last season, I actually look back this morning, the 1-1 draw against Dundee United, where people were calling St Andrew about by Christmas. If you look at it's his bench. I looked at not so much the first team. In the bench, you see people like Montgomery, Sorrow. There was about five players. You're thinking, wow, I can't believe that was your bench. And when you look at the bench we've got now, this is Andrew's team. He knows what he's got now. Whereas back then, it's great he worked in the training field and gave his instructions. I would say back then, that was in September, 26th September, he still didn't know who these players were. He still didn't know the men that they were either. He was only on the door 3 months. Whereas now, he's done his research with these players that he's got. They're all his signings. Only one player started for us in the 2019 Cup final. It's Callum McGregor. So this is his squad. He knows them. He trusts them. And that was a massive show of faith in his team that I think is going to bode well for us going into next season.
Tell me this, lads, the bench. Talking about the bench, just because the first thing I noticed was that Burnaby wasn't on it. You know, and we didn't have cover for left back really, unless you were dropping Hatate back to left back. So, who was the bench bad news for? So you're looking at Burnaby, Forrest. Is there anyone else that was left out that was really in with a shout?
No, off the top of my head,
I think that's, unless Burnaby is injured, I think that's very bad news for him, the way that bench panned out, because I didn't see, you know, despite the fact we didn't have cover at left back, I was thinking, you know, could Kobayashi cover it? You know, is that who else do we have that could slot in there? I wasn't thinking, oh God, you know, we really need Burnaby on the bench and that other guy needs to be dropped. So I think unless he's injured, that's pretty bad news for him, because that to me was as close as we've been in a good while to our strongest starting 11 and our strongest bench. You know, there weren't any significant injuries.
Was he on the bench at Ibrox?
Bernabe. I'm sure he was.
Was bad news. You bring on Juranovic, who was halfway.
It was, and that was what we said at the time. And then it turned out there was supposedly a sickness running through the squad, and maybe he'd been affected. But we said that at the time because Juranovic went on to have a bit of a mare.
And there's no hint of injuries in the squad either. I don't think there was any injuries in the squad that was communicated before the cup final. So to spend £3.5 million,
we'll just need to edit that last five. Last minute and a half out.
So congratulations to Bernabe.
You've got a solid future at the club, son. Keep
well
going.
Well done, mate. You'll be fine.
Jeez.
No P45s there, right? Okay. No.
Best £3.5 million we've ever spent.
Right.
That's us put back in your box, eh?
Aye, that's us. Been a wee hero, eh?
I know.
I've got one last question to ask. Why are we becoming obsessed with the number of trophies that we've won? It's something that's never factored into my life supporting Celtic.
I still struggle
to actually, tell you how many total league titles that we've actually won. Some clubs pride themselves on saying that they're the world's biggest club and they've won the most ever trophies, when it's quite clearly a lie.
Can anybody
tell me how many league cups we've won?
20 odds. No, 30 odds. I don't know. Can I tell you?
How many
Scottish cups we've won?
Not off the top of my head, Ken. But the thing is, we're not trying to pretend we're something we're not.
I know.
So,
I'm not trying to measure something we've not got either.
Exactly. So essentially, we are still, because we are still the same club, it's not important to us, you know. When you look up the Celtic Wiki and find that out in about 2 seconds, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. But we're not measuring that against anyone else because it's not important. That's not how we see ourselves either now or in the future. Because we have that uninterrupted history, it's not something we have a massive inferiority complex about that we constantly have to keep spouting off around.
Mr. Whip comes in it because we're one behind them in total. I couldn't even have told you that.
I knew it was a couple, and the only reason why I know that is because they keep battling about it in the media. That's the only reason why I know. If it wasn't getting spouted about in the media, then I would have no idea.
But what's in total? Because you're talking about two separate clubs, so what's in total?
So what about
Partick Thistle? If you're talking about Glasgow clubs, why don't we add up what Partick Thistle have won and Rangers runners-up have won, you know, rather than, Rangers runners-up and the Rangers as they were before? It's a nonsense. They've only got one trophy. You know, is it two? I can't remember. Two. Michael Beale thinks they've got all of them. But they've got two trophies. So, yeah, I completely refuse to buy into this narrative that's a total lie. And we all know it's a lie, but because it's in the papers every day, we feel as if we have to respond to it. The answer to the question is, they've got two trophies. How many have we got? Don't know, but I know it's more than two.
superb, John.
I didn't see us foot tripping up at Paisley on Sunday, Paddy, at the Simba Stadium or whatever it's called now. I've got a clue what it's called now.
I don't think Andrew's ever meant to let us lose our focus. He did say the players were getting less than 24 hours off to enjoy the cup final, didn't he? He said he was home for 8 o'clock on Sunday night. And the players got a wee bit longer than that, and then he was back in training. I think they're back in training Monday afternoon, or was it Tuesday morning? So he's completely focused on the job at hand. The players are as well, let's be honest. The players are never mind to kind of take their eye off the ball. So, it borders on a bit being cocky, but nah, I don't see us dropping anything at Paisley.
Will we wear that silver top again, John?
the camouflage top, no one can see it. Those were other fascinating comments by Ange about how important it was to let the players enjoy themselves. Because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know. So I thought that all these comments, as usual, were spot on. Fair play to the man, what a job he's doing. And the other really important comments he made during the week, we don't have time to discuss now, but you know, we discussed them yesterday about how long he's going to be here. That was the most important thing he said nearly since he got here. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's how I think he's integral to the future of the club, and I would love to see the Ange dynasty becoming a reality, as I said last week, and this would be the first real, just another building block in the foundations of the Ange dynasty. I'd love to see that happen.
I would love to see that happen as well. I will wrap it up for the days, lads. Thank you to the over 600 that have been actually watching live. Roddy McDonald comes in and tells us about the multiverse. In the multiverse, but in that alternative universe, we beat Feyenoord 2-1.
Well, that would suit me.
Drew Mac, CFC, Tav and Barisets are still trapped in the multiverse.
You would need to have a multiverse.
I've got to agree with that. And Terrace Pat, happy birthday, the blessed Martin O'Neill, who is 71 today. And I had the pleasure to meet him on Saturday night, and he's an utter gentleman. And they say never meet your heroes, but Martin O'Neill was absolutely fantastic. So happy birthday, Mr. O'Neill. I'm sure he's all want to say happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Matt. Have a wee drink for you tonight.
I'll
phone him. The script, Kev.
You're going to phone him.
I'll phone him later. We're close.
Right, lads, dinna be bams to each other, and I'll see you all next week. Hail, hail.
Network.